family blood runs deep, especially when it's spilled.
We are talking about a very brutal and bloody murder.
A loving mother sows the seeds of her own demise.
A 15-year-old girl turned into a cold-blooded killer.
It was incredibly savage.
Two young children don't like their new mommy.
A better way to really hurt her is to kill what she loves the most.
And a daughter who wants payback.
Belinda was only dangerous to one person in the world. The man who created her.
These deadly women turn on the people who gave them life. For a daughter's revenge. Things match the intensity of first love.
It was toxic and powerful.
Innocence plus desire makes a potent mix.
Get out of my room!
We're meant to be together, so no one can stop this.
I frankly was scared because she was so young and she was capable of something like that.
In Nashua, New Hampshire, schoolgirl Nicole Kaczynskis has found love online.
Nicole hadn't had a lot of boyfriends. She was really caught up by the attention of this guy who was saying amazing things to her about how beautiful she was and what she meant to him.
Nicole's just 15. Billy Sullivan is 18. The fact they've never met only adds to the excitement.
They filled in sort of the gaps of everyday communications and relationships with fantasies and making these fantastic assumptions about who the other person was.
For Nicole, making friends in the real world isn't as easy. The straight-A student is an outsider, a target for bullies.
Hey, Nicole, can I see your bracelets? They're really nice.
There was one instance where a kid came up from behind, pulled her sweatpants down, and that day she wasn't wearing any underwear, so she was completely embarrassed to go back to school the next day.
I think the bullying when Nicole was young contributed to too low self-esteem, and I think that all of that made her really ripe pickings for somebody like Sullivan when he came along.
Nicole's best friend,
hey, sweetie,
has always been her mom.
How was your day?
Jean. Yeah. Nicole's dad left after a divorce, and they rarely spoke.
Her relationship with Jean, her mother, could not have been any better growing up.
Straight A's!
They absolutely did everything together. They were inseparable.
Straight A's!
Nicole adored her mother. It was a very close bond, loving relationship. That is, until Billy Sullivan came into the picture.
Relieved that Nicole's found a friend, Jean encourages the relationship, inviting Billy to spend the weekend, where the young couple steal intimate moments.
I love you, Nicole.
It's the first relationship she's ever had with a boy. It's everything she dreamed it would have been. It's the castle in the sky. It's the knight in shining armor has come to rescue her.
Writer M. William Phelps says Billy filled a void in Nicole's young life.
Her not having a father figure in her life, I think, really contributed to her being easily manipulated. It definitely contributed to it.
When Nicole's parents divorced, she suffered some pretty profound feelings of abandonment in that her father didn't have much to do with her anymore.
What no one knows is that her boyfriend is fighting his own demons.
He did have mental health issues. He had been hospitalized a number of times. During high school, had some behavioral issues, anxiety, that kind of thing.
So Billy's been on a plethora of different psychotic drugs for depression, for anger, for schizophrenia, for all sorts of psychological problems.
Would you like some more water?
Yeah, thanks.
But Billy's stopped taking his medication.
Certainly polished that off quickly.
Yeah, it was nice.
He's unstable, ready to lash out.
I suppose you don't usually have spread like that.
One of the things that really angers Billy is when, you know, Nicole's mom says to Billy, I'm glad I could provide you this dinner. I bet you don't get that much at home.
And what's that supposed to mean?
That was really rude. Enough.
This angers Billy.
No. My mom is just as good a cook as you, okay? She's better than me. That was crap. That was absolute crap.
He thinks it's a slap against his mother. And Billy's a mama's boy. So, if you put his mother down, he's going to lash back out at you.
Nicole, where are you going?
Away from you.
Billy Sullivan starts driving a wedge between mother and daughter.
Once again, we have a story of a young, impressionable teenage girl with pretty much no experience with men, meeting someone older who manipulates her and turns her against her own family.
She began to hate her mother, and Billy Sullivan put that hate in her. So she begins, everything her mother does is wrong. Billy had planted all of these seeds in her. And they just germinated over a period of time.
Soon, Nicole will make a terrifying choice between her mother and her man.
Billy Sullivan is everything to Nicole. She will do anything for him, including killing her own mother.
Most nights, 18-year-old Billy Sullivan talks to his girlfriend.
Hey, babe, it's me.
Hey.
How you doing?
15-year-old Nicole Kaczynskis.
She's 21 months. We can get married.
She's in love for the first time.
I can't wait that long. I want to be with you now.
They met online, got together for a face-to-face, and now they're inseparable.
Off that phone.
Mom, I'm in the middle of a conversation.
Nicole's mom, Jeannie, is worried this is more than puppy love.
Get off the phone, get into bed. Tonight is a school night.
Nicole's mother really didn't know what she was getting involved with. That just added fuel to this romantic fire that was burning on the internet. Now they had seen each other. Now they need to see each other all the time.
If you don't stop these calls, I'm gonna take that phone
out.
Go to bed.
Nicole wants to live with Billy in Connecticut and go traveling. She begs her mom.
Jeannie, rightfully so, said, you're 15, you're finishing school, you're not moving to Connecticut. And that really upset both Nicole and Billy.
All they're hearing is no, 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 no. And to Billy, that's poison. Every time he hears no, that wick gets closer to the end of that dynamite, and it's going to explode.
Their final plan is simple and brutal. Nicole waits nearby in the car.
Nicole called him and asked him what was taking so long.
Hello? Don't worry, it'll be done soon.
Jeannie started getting upset that Nicole wasn't home and kept saying, where is she? Tell her to come home.
Nicole, you get your ass back here!
Billy began to become angrier and angrier.
We're in love. What can't you be happy for?
Because she's 15 years old.
And who are you to control her life?
I am her mother! And I know what's best for her!
When Jean turned around, he whacked her across the back.
It looks as if Jeannie tried to get out of the kitchen door. Billy started grabbing kitchen knives and attacking Jeannie with the steak knives from the steak block in the kitchen. A number of the steak knives snapped off during the course of the attack.
Strikes the killer blow.
And the knife goes right through a lung, and that's when she says, I'm done. And she dies.
Jeannie Domenico was well-loved in the community, hard worker, really sort of a bright, energetic, sweet woman. She was trying to make her daughter happy.
She's gone.
What?
I'm telling you, she's dead.
The young couple have a deal. Nicole has to clean up.
The fact that she could go in to clean up after Billy had killed her mother. She had to have hit her mother with the door. And then she had to have stepped over her body. And clean up for her boyfriend. That she was able to do that was chilling to me.
The most shocking part of this crime for me was that a 15-year-old girl who loved her mother turned into a cold-blooded killer.
Within hours of the murder, Nicole realizes she's made a terrible mistake.
That fantasy of Billy Sullivan and driving off to the sunset together is gone. Reality now is set in. Oh my God, what happened?
The freedom Nicole was willing to kill for lasts only as long as the first police interview.
She didn't hold up very well under questioning by the police, and Billy threw her under the bus pretty quickly. She turned around and did the same to him.
Billy Sullivan is convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to life without parole. Nicole Kaczynskis pleads guilty to second-degree murder. She's serving 40 years. her childhood gone.
Cole is a girl who really never understood what she had and never appreciated what she had.
Her life as a promising honor roll student at 15 years old with her mother who loved her very much, she lost her entire life. And for what?
Deep within the walls of an English convent, a young woman confesses.
I have a very heavy heart, Father.
You can tell me anything, child.
Her words will stun the British public.
I think she ultimately wanted her father and his wife to know what she had done.
And solve a 5-year-old mystery.
The Road murder is almost up there with Jack the Ripper.
The mid-1800s, in a Wiltshire country house, governess Mary Pratt puts to bed her young charge, Constance Kent. Her mother is too ill to care for her.
The governess took over the care of this child. She lived with her, she ate her meals with her, whereas the mother gradually retreated to another room in the house.
And Governess Mary is making another friend, the child's father, Samuel Kent. They're having an affair.
It was quite common for a man to keep a mistress, but not in the same house as his wife. Not only was Samuel Kent having a relationship with the governess, it was virtually under the nose of his wife.
Can't you at least wait until I'm dead?
Samuel's wife is gravely ill.
Get on back to bed.
The father's ongoing affair with the hired help was humiliating and very threatening to these young children who basically saw their mother being displaced by this younger woman.
Francis, come on.
Constance's humiliation continues after her mother dies and her father marries governess Mary. They soon have a son, Francis, who steals attention from Constance and her brother, William.
William, how dare you come into this house in those shoes?
You can't talk to him like that. You're not his mother.
Constance, Emily, Kent, how dare you talk to me like that?
Kent and his new wife are wrapped up in each other and wrapped up in their new little boy.
I am the lady of this house and you will follow my orders.
Constance and her brother are kind of pushed to one side by what appears to be almost an archetypal wicked stepmother.
You are nothing but a governess to me.
How dare you go to your room?
No!
Constance, you must show Mary some respect.
The children of the first marriage clearly feel themselves being put upon by the new mother, the stepmother.
When Constance was rejected by the governess, that had to be devastating for her. I mean, it was a betrayal on top of betrayal. And I think that was probably a turning point for Constance.
Then, on June 30th, 1860,
Francis!
Little Francis goes missing. His nursemaid is frantic.
Elizabeth Gough, who was the nursemaid, wakes to find that the little boy is missing.
As the alarm is raised, neighbors join the search.
Look, I'll check the outhouse. You check the garden.
Roadhill House is sprawling. There are many places a child could be hiding.
Francis?
But they'll soon discover that little Francis isn't playing.
They find the child's body in the outside privy. This little, tiny, three-year-old is found with his throat cut.
I'm sorry, sir, but I found Francis.
In 19th century England, a mother mourns her son.
Yes, sir.
A child found savagely murdered, dumped in a lavatory.
What we're talking about here is a small boy, 3 years old, taken from his bed in the middle of the night. He has his throat gashed from ear to ear.
The victim's half-sister, Constance Kent, and her young brother, William, seem to feel nothing for the woman they once adored.
William and Constance had a common enemy. They looked at her and they saw the woman that destroyed their happy life.
The war between daughter and stepmother had its first casualty. A three-year-old innocent.
I think the brutal way that Constance killed her little half-brother speaks to the intense hatred she had for her stepmother and probably her father. She was sending them a message. Disposed of him in an outhouse. The ultimate insult. If the blood vessels to the neck were cut and the child was held upside down, the child would very quickly exsanguinate. We are talking about a very brutal and bloody murder here. There is not a chance that the perpetrator wouldn't have been drenched in the victim's blood.
Britain's famous Scotland Yard police unit has just been established.
What time was it when you realized the boy wasn't in his bed?
Just after 7 a.m.
And Inspector Jack Witcher is one of their first investigators.
I thought Mary Drew heard Francis crying in the middle of the night, so she came in to take him to her room.
He starts by interviewing the household.
Why didn't you go in and check?
Well, I thought they might be asleep.
He's chasing a blood trail.
Come forward.
And soon, he has a strong lead.
And this is the garment you wore the night before the boy went missing.
Constance Kent, when she's asked to produce her night attire, produces a freshly laundered nightdress.
It looks to be freshly washed.
Yes, it was washed this morning.
He's clearly a very shrewd individual. He would be the sort of person who would say, pressed nightdress, Miss Kent? I don't think we wore that last night now, did we?
I see. Very well.
Inspector Witcher's prime suspect is now a 16-year-old girl.
Do you recognize this blade?
And the more he learns about the family history, the more certain he becomes.
Witcher is sharp enough to have recognized the problems in that house and the potential for a murder being committed by one of the children of the first marriage.
Inspector Witcher arrests Constance for murder. But the times are in her favor. No one believes it.
There is an assumption in Victorian England that crime is committed by the dregs of the working class. Not a member of the respectable classes, not a member of the family, and certainly not a girl.
Constance goes free, and Inspector Witcher is humiliated.
Witcher actually had some sort of breakdown. The fact that nobody believed him, nobody was prepared to actually follow his logical and sensible reasoning.
The Road Hill murderer remains a dark mystery for the next 5 years. Until an unexpected confession at a convent in England's south.
I don't know if she confessed out of guilt. I think it's more likely she confessed because she wanted to take credit for it. I think she ultimately wanted her father and his wife to know what she had done.
Constance Kent says she did it for revenge.
You must tell the police. You must tell the police everything.
She said, I wanted to hurt my stepmother, and I thought about killing her, but then I thought a better way to really hurt her is to kill what she loves the most. And so I killed her son.
A shocked Victorian legal system first sentences Constance Kent to death, but it's later commuted to life. Within 20 years, Constance is released and sails to Australia, where many convicts made a new life. There, she lives to 100.
I don't think she was evil, and I don't think she was mad. I think there's enough evidence, both from her time in prison and in her later years, to suggest it was entirely the opposite.
I can understand her feeling of hostility towards her stepmother. On the other hand, I find it incredibly difficult to have sympathy with anyone who cuts the throat of a small child.
Constance never sees her stepmother or father again.
This was a revenge killing. I'll break your heart the way you broke mine.
Many things are handed down from one generation to the next.
Oh, you should have seen what just happened.
But the most powerful of all is fear.
The murder that Belinda found herself involved in was probably destiny.
Some daughters aren't daddy's little girl.
It's an incredibly complex story.
In the year 2000, the Australian city of Wollongong is rocked by two savage murders.
The first was David O'Hearn, a shopkeeper who was brutally murdered and decapitated, and his whole of his body was completely cut up and molested, for want of a better word.
Author John Sutter Linton started following one of the most brutal slayings in Australian history.
2 weeks after then, the former Lord Mayor of Wollongong, Frank R. Kell, was savagely beaten. Tie pins were placed in his eyes. Again, he was degraded in death.
Even more shocking is the murderer's identity. A 19-year-old youth with no police history.
In his original statement, Mark Valera told police pretty much that the killing of David O'Hearn was an opportunistic killing and one where he got a big thrill out of it. And he basically stayed with the body for a long time experimenting with it.
He drove him to do it. He drove him to do what he did.
But soon, attention turns to someone else. Mark's sister, Belinda Van Crevel.
He's the one that should be in jail, not my brother.
She's not only defending her brother, but laying the blame with someone else.
Her dear brother Mark was sentenced to life in prison with no chance of ever being released. On that day, her life changed forever, and she wanted the man who she held responsible for losing her brother to pay.
What's this? For me?
That person is the father, Jack Van Crevel, a single parent raising two children.
Make sure you wear one of these.
To many, Jack was a good father, doing his best since his wife left.
He was able to give Belinda and Mark pretty much anything they wanted. When he enrolled Mark into the bike riding club, he bought him the best motorcycle he could buy, the best safety gear he could buy. Whatever the latest fashions were, Belinda and Mark wore.
But the children see it very differently.
Get rid of all this crap out of here!
Get out of here, you old bastard! I can have whatever I want down
Belinda
here!
Belinda and Mark say they are victims of abuse.
Oh, am I really?
Physical and sexual abuse.
I remember everything!
What's that supposed to mean?
You know, you're nothing but a sick pedophile!
What? Oh! Oh! Eels!
Just
Belinda made allegations throughout Mark's trial and throughout an ongoing investigation of being interfered with. And she made complaints to other people that she was interfered with by her father, Jack.
Former FBI profiler Candace DeLong believes parental abuse could explain the gruesome nature of Mark's terrible crimes.
He focused on their genitals. He attacked their eyes. Mark didn't merely kill two men. He brutalized and violated their corpses. He was expressing, I think, tremendous anger and rage against them that really was meant for his father.
During his trial, Mark claims both his victims made sexual advances to him. They were both on his hit list, along with several others.
His own father, Jack Van Crevel, was on his hit list.
Mark doesn't get the chance to kill again. He's locked away for life. But in the coming weeks, someone will finish what he started. Belinda Van Crevel lives at home with her father, Jack, and her daughter, Tia. but it's a family home riddled with trouble. Brother Mark is in jail for two brutal murders. And he's accused his father of sexual assault. Belinda blames her father for her brother's crimes. And now fears her daughter may be sexually assaulted. She confides in her brother's best friend, Keith Schreiber.
I'm a bastard.
I think in Keith, Belinda saw a soulmate that she could count on to deliver the vengeance that she felt against her father.
All I know is he has to die.
Yeah.
Belinda had turned around to Keith and said, I would love to see my father die.
Keith took it upon himself to carry that out.
The Van Crevel household will be rocked by another brutal murder, much closer to home.
Keith was killing as a favor to his beloved friends.
Before Jack can make any kind of sense of what's going on, he's struck with the axe.
This is for Mark, you pedophile bastard!
All Jack can do is basically defend himself. He's kicking, he's trying to punch the air.
But Jack's not alone in the house that night.
Belinda was in the room next door to where Jack was being brutally murdered. She was with her daughter, Tia, laying there listening to the murder take place.
Keith expects to be quick, but things aren't going to plan. Jack survives the axe.
He takes a sharp knife from the kitchen drawer, walks back to the bedroom and stabs Jack several times. He's attempting to try and get the heart.
Belinda and Tia stay put as Keith looks for yet another weapon.
He then goes back out, grabs a poker from the fire, brings that back in and uses that as his third weapon.
Jack finally succumbs. The horrifying sounds stop. When Belinda thinks the coast is clear, she makes a run for it.
Belinda scoops up Tia, jumps in the car and drives to police station where she alerts the police to what may have happened. Because to her, she hasn't been in the room, she doesn't know what's going on. All she knows is there's lots of blood everywhere.
Belinda maintains she doesn't know the killer's identity. Jamie Williams is suspicious.
She made mention of hearing noises like someone being murdered. That was the first report to police she made. And that was the extent of her interest or involvement in her father's death. I think she was aware at the time that what violence was going to be committed in that house.
Belinda seems to have little interest in finding her father's killer. But police do.
Keith was arrested within 24 hours after the murder. Keith, for whatever reason, felt there was no point in denying it. He admitted to the murder. The physical evidence matched Keith anyway, so there was no question that Keith was ever, you know, not a suspect.
Found guilty of murder, Keith Schreiber is serving 16 years in prison.
I think Keith may have carried out Belinda's fantasy that her father be dead because he wanted to impress her, because he wanted to impress his buddy Mark. He lost something too. He lost his best friend.
But police suspect Keith didn't act alone. They discover letters and a money trail from Belinda to her father's killer.
Belinda's undoing was her loose tongue in relation to telling people what knowledge she had of the murder and to the extent where she was involved in the murder herself.
Belinda Van Crevel is found guilty of soliciting murder. Although the maximum sentence is 25 years, Belinda receives 6.
It appears to me that the judge in Belinda's case took a great deal of pity on her. I think he very much believed and understood what she had been through.
In 2007, after serving 4 years, Belinda is released. She lives in Sydney, regularly visiting her brother in jail.
Belinda was raised in the same household as Mark, but she was stronger mentally than Mark. Belinda didn't kill as her brother did. Belinda became a fighter.
Belinda had a skill of manipulating people to the extent where she could get him to do anything, even kill her father.
Belinda was only dangerous to one person in the world, the man who created her.
For these deadly women, blood was not a family bond. Nicole Kosinska's destroyed one love to gain another. Constance Kent avenged her maternal mother by slaughtering an innocent. While Belinda Van Crevel wanted to extinguish a demon, she thinks destroyed her family. Once they cut their family ties, there was no turning back from a daughter's revenge.